Hello, WHO. This is your war correspondent, Herb Plambeck, again reporting from somewhere in Germany, where there is so much tenseness, excitement, and... Hello, WHO. This is your war correspondent, Herb Plambeck, again reporting from somewhere in Germany, where there is so much tenseness, excitement, and expectancy now that it's hard to know what to say first. Events of the past few days and hours, the taking of Munich and its despicable Nazi shrine, the reported death of Hitler, von Rundstedt's capture earlier today, the utterly indescribable horror at Dachau, Himmler's various bids to end the bloody strife, have us all in a state of nervous uncertainty. But our GIs are pushing ahead through blinding snow and cold these first days of what should be a pleasant month of May in rugged mountain areas down here in the Bavarian Alps. As you know, yesterday our troops completed the taking of Munich. And while with them, we had the rare opportunity of doing a broadcast from one of the most famous of all fallen Nazi landmarks. Here is this report by wire recording.
This is Herb Plambeck, your war correspondent, speaking from Munich, the birthplace of Nazism, on the day that our troops took this famous German city. We first came into Munich last evening and saw and heard much in the way of war, but it's quite different now. White flags instead of the Nazi swastika. Smiling people instead of the terrorized people that unquestionably have been here all these past weeks and months. Many, many of our own GIs all about us. I think we have one of the most unique positions I have ever had the privilege of having a broadcast originate. We are at the famous Brown House, the place that is known the world over as the original administrative building of the Nazi Party, where Hitler and his henchmen spent many of their early days, had their offices and their records. This is located right near the Königsplatz, in the same area where the memorials to those 16 Hitler satellites who participated in the beer putsch are buried. And close to also the building where Hitler and Mussolini and Chamberlain and Deladier had that meeting, that noted peace in our time meeting. There was a shot just fired a little ways off, but we're quite sure that was not a sniper shot. It was just one of our GIs doing a little bit of very deserving celebrating. Coming back here to the Brown House again, it's quite different from any pictures you may have seen. It's just one great big pile of rubble and debris, as it very properly should be. And very interestingly, right in the middle of it, a cozy fire, built here by the GIs from all sections of the country. And perhaps we can pick up the crackle of that fire just a little bit. I'm going to step up to it, put the microphone close. It's a very comfortable fire because this is a very uncomfortable kind of a day. It's May, but it's been snowing most of the day, very cold, rainy, and sleety. So this fire is quite the thing. Let's talk to some of the men around this fire. I see here, one of the boys from the 42nd Division, the Rainbow Division, the division that came through here during the past day or two and sort of finished up the job, as I recall, earlier today. What is your name, sir?
Sergeant George.
Sergeant, where are you from?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Fine. You're one of our Middle Western boys. Will you say a word about coming through here?
Well, it was quite a trip. Did a lot of traveling, but didn't meet very much opposition. The Air Corps and everybody did a pretty good job here.
The Air Corps most certainly has done a job here in Munich. I'm glad you made that point, because as we came through, we certainly saw the evidence of that. And I think not very far from here, around this fire, one of the Air Corps men is to be... Let's see. Here he is, over here. You're with the Air Corps, aren't you, sir?
Yes, sir.
What is your name, please?
Donald Allen, sir.
From where?
San Francisco.
Would you say a word about, well, as I heard another broadcaster mention this a while ago, your handiwork here in Munich?
Well, as I told your British colleague, today I'm realizing
one of my biggest ambitions I've had since I've been in the Army, and that is to be on the ground at one of the targets which I bombed. And it's given me just as much a thrill standing here and seeing the work, the damage that we've done, as flying over the target ever did.
You've done a wonderful job, Captain, and we're very happy to have had you with us. And I see, too, others around us here. We can't possibly be with them all. Can't possibly have them all with us on the broadcast, of course. I'd like to make a point that this is in the same area where that world-noted concentration camp, the first and the worst of all in history, the Dachau camp, is located. And it, too, was liberated here just the other day. And, of course, it is one of the most tragic sites of all time. We won't take time to deal with that, but I do think that we have some Allied prisoners who were liberated at different points. And I think right here is one of the men from New Zealand. Is that right, sir?
That is right.
And will you say a word about how you feel now that liberation has come to you?
I can only thank the Americans for coming in. I saw them working over the town with their liberators, bombing, and they subdued the Nazis.
Thank you, our friend from New Zealand. Well, we must hurry on because time is so certainly slipping away. There's much else we'd like to have brought in about all the rubble and ruin here in Munich at the different points, the famous railway station, one of the largest in the world at one time, the beer hall where we visited earlier today, and a very interesting sight we saw there as some 2,000 or 3,000 Nazis were marched by that one-time shrine of Hitlerism. We saw them as they walked by there, being directed by our own American GIs, being taken to one of the prisoner of war enclosures where they most properly belong. And it was quite a contrast to the way they once marched on that same street down to the various other Nazi shrines. It was great to see the American flag flying earlier today, flying here in Munich, in the birthplace, in the town which is the birthplace of Nazism.
Yes, there are 1,000 other things we'd like to have said from the time we first entered the city when fires and occasional exploding shells lit up the night sky, on through the trips along rubble-strewn streets, jammed with tanks and trucks, our tanks and trucks, and crowded by our boys, and countless thousands of weeping, wildly happy, liberated Allied slave workers, and by endless columns of German prisoners of war, very much subdued. The smashed buildings are a story in themselves, and so is the story of those 800 American boys who have suffered unspeakable abuse as Nazi prisoners, like Ben Watson of Truro, Clark Starry of Redfield, Wayne Doe of Marshalltown, and Cecil Cardwell and Paul Imbolden of Sioux City, whom I had the privilege of interviewing, and whose eyes were still wet with tears of joy. Perhaps one reason why the fall of Nazism's birthplace made such an impression was because it's near here where some of the most hideous crimes of all time were committed, at Dachau. Things I could never have believed had I not actually seen them with my own eyes. Things you cannot be expected to believe. They're beyond human comprehension. I do not have the words at my command, and I doubt if anyone else has, with which to describe the heinous brutality, the absolutely unspeakable baseness, the tragedy seen at Dachau. It's simply too horrible to relate or to ask the airways to carry. In telling you that which I feel can be told of Nazism's unforgettable crime against mankind, let me first remind you, Dachau was established back in 1933 as a place where courageous, straight-thinking German people who refused to bow to the insanity of Hitlerism were sent for punishment. Men like Dr. Martin Niemöller, whose fate we do not yet know. Some political prisoners have endured 12 years of torture. How, I cannot say, for the only release from this barbed wire-studded, blood-soaked, true shrine of Nazism was death. My first exposure to Dachau's horror came after a short jeep ride through pretty Bavarian hill country with its serene and once peaceful farm valleys and flower gardens, leaving me entirely unprepared for the mad nightmare I suddenly found myself unable to awaken from. We pulled up to a railroad spur, and there I saw a train of death, 45 boxcars, some of them nearly half filled with human bodies, Poles, Russians, Jews, and people of all other lands and creeds, many of them sent from Buchenwald and other Nazi places of horror, all of them victims of starvation, disease, and torture. I can't bring myself to describe this in its entirety. Many of the bodies were nude, others clad in a few scant, filthy rags. One, a dark-haired woman, her head pillowed on the bony shoulder of a bearded old man. Others, with legs or arms just amputated. All of the bodies so emaciated and shrunken, they were mere skeletons covered with bruise-stained gray skin. The same horrible scene in the next car, in the next, and the next. This, then, was my introduction to Dachau. We walked along the train of death with its ghastly human cargo to the end car. There, a group of GIs, officers, and liberated prisoners looked with cold, unflinching eyes in that car. In it were the mangled, beaten, blood-splattered, completely unrecognizable bodies of Nazi stormtroopers, mad guards, instantly taken care of by the first Dachau prisoners who could lay their hands on them. We walked on, beyond the huge boiler house where rotten potatoes and moldy bread was prepared as food, on through the warehouses where Himmler's picture adorns every room, where enslaved workers were in the pottery and other factories Nazi bigwigs used to increase their ill-gotten wealth. In the compound, 30,000 or more men and women of all nations were still milling with wild excitement and weeping at their new freedom. There were less than a dozen American correspondents and GIs in our party. The prisoners were still so joyous over their liberation less than 24 hours ago, they all but smothered us. To say I was frightened is putting it mildly. The salutes, embraces, kisses, and reverent words of praise we observed made us feel more humble than you know. In one of the filth-covered barracks, I saw the horrible picture of those liberated too late, those dying from years of Nazi abuse. I had to turn my eyes and hurry away, only to enter the most horrible place any person can ever be asked to see, the crematorium, the absolute finality in systematized mass murder. Here, in this place where Nazi insanity attained its ultimate, were scenes I must not inflict on you other than to briefly say, victims were brought to a so-called reception room, disrobed, sent to a shower chamber, there to be cleansed as Himmler ordered, and according to some statements, to breathe their last as gas seeped in from alleged shower head. The next room was nearly filled with emaciated bodies of those released by death. And in the next chamber were the ovens, now cold because fuel had given out 2 days before, in which up to 8 bodies were burned at a time, the ashes of recent victims still in grim evidence. There on the walls were sadistic murals and some of Hitler's mad phrases. And there in the next room, it stench so terrible no one could bear it more than for a moment. Back to the ceiling were more uncounted hundreds of bodies of those to whom death has been a blessing. I'm sure I need not tell you more. You can understand now why every GI, officer, correspondent, and other person who has had the terrifying responsibility of seeing the crime of Dachau has this unforgettable memory of Nazism deeply and unforgettably burned in his heart. This is Herb Plambeck, returning you to the land where things like Dachau must seem completely unreal, asking you to thank God you'll never know atrocities against mankind as we've seen them here. I return you now to WHO.